Career Connect.
And our topic this evening that we're focusing on, of course, you can throw anything you want at us on the text line 4001. We're here to answer your questions on careers. But a topic we're going to discuss throughout the coming sort of 45 minutes is workplace wellness. And it's something that's really becoming more and more significant, with many companies now investing in helping to keep their employees in better health. In fact, globally, the workplace wellness industry is worth $43 billion, and that's rising. In the studio with us to discuss the importance of wellness at work and anything else, of course, as I said, that you want to raise with them, Shane Phillips, Managing Director of the Phillips Group. Welcome to you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Nice to have you back. You'll recognise Shane's voice if you listen to Career Connect regularly. But a debut on Career Connect tonight, Becky Craman. Welcome to you, Programme Director for Awards at Mead.
Thank you, Claire. Nice to be here.
Lovely to have you with us. Let's start in general terms, and we'll start with you, Becky, if that's all right. Obviously, you have some strong opinions on this. Why should we be discussing wellness in the workplace? Why is it important? Do employers really need to care about it? Or is it just a big money-making industry?
I think it's really important, especially if you are in a very pressurised and quite stressful role. So we've seen organisations coming back year on year to enter our awards programme, especially in finance and hospitality, especially in those two sectors. And we have run an annual survey to the market on wellness in the workplace for the last 4 years. And this year in the survey, we find that 65% of the respondents said that wellness is important in the workplace, especially due to internal motivation, so staff retention and keeping your employees motivated.
Shane, is it important? I mean, if you've got a healthy workforce, they're, I assume, going to be more productive. They're not going to take as many days off sick. Is it worth spending money on as a company?
Yeah, I think absolutely. You know, when you look at mid-management and senior management levels, you definitely, an entry level, of course, you're going to need to have a fun, exciting, positive work environment. It's definitely going to help.
But I think the biggest question here, there are so many theories around wellness and what it is, and it means one thing to one person and a whole other thing to somebody else. What are we talking about here? When you're talking about workplace wellness, what does that actually mean? You know, what are we saying here? And particularly, Becky, from your perspective, having these awards, what kind of criteria are we talking about?
So it's different depending on the organisation. I think a lot of companies tend to focus on the fitness side of wellness. Mm-hmm. But this year we have seen several organisations starting to really look at the mental health of their employees. So I think that's starting to be a big focus, especially in very pressurised roles.
So talk us through the awards, Becky, first of all, so that people know what we're talking about. It's the Demand Corporate Health Awards. You're looking for the companies that are doing the most for their employees.
Yes, so the awards are open to UAE employers, and they could be local companies or international organisations. And we're looking for what the companies are doing to support their internal employees with corporate health.
And so what kind of things are you looking for when you're shortlisted? I know you're at the shortlist stage. I think it's four companies shortlisted, right? What are you looking for? What should they be doing? I mean, I think that's what Sally's trying to ask. What is wellness? Are we expecting our employers to worry about whether I'm keeping myself fit and what I'm eating and all of those things? Is it any of their business?
So we have 48 finalists in the awards programme this year. I think that the four companies you were thinking about are for the Workplace of the Year award. That specific category recognises the physical facility that companies are providing. So ergonomic furniture, for example, the lighting of the office. Are companies providing relaxation and fitness areas within their facilities? If they have a satellite office, how are they getting involved, people involved working across the UAE, not just in their head corporate office.
So ergonomics, because I've worked here for 14 years and nobody ever, Shane, has looked at my desk setup and decided whether it's going to hurt my shoulders and my neck and all of those things. I mean, I don't think this is something that a lot of companies are thinking about here, are they?
Well, actually, in my company, we just changed all the desks to the ones that you can move so you can stand up.
So you have an option of standing and sitting.
Yes, and it was actually inspired by Michael Bitzer, oddly, who's, I think, sponsored the Demand Health Awards. He's actually a bit of a health nut, and he also has a desk with it. You can stand for most of the day, be a little bit more active. So I think this is actually seeping in to companies. But I think also getting back to your point here, where employees are paying for your health insurance, I think an employer has every right to demand, you know, that you eat healthily and that you work out, because at the end of the day, they're going to be the one stuck with the bill. So I think employers should demand, actually, you should even have it that these are your fitness goals, you're not meeting them, you're not going to get the incentive at the end of the year. It's going to affect your bonus.
So should we be actually weighing the employees at work? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think not just weight, because if you gain muscle, you can actually get heavier and become more fit.
Yeah, true. Yeah. So like there should be an annual or biannual fitness assessment for every employee?
Yeah, I think as we move forward, organizations, I think, will evolve, and I think you need to become more empathetic, and organizations need to take employee goals, personal goals, as well as business goals, they need to mix together. So when you set your annual plan for the beginning of the year, it shouldn't just be how many widgets you're going to sell. It should also be personal goals, and health should definitely be on the agenda, because at the end of the day, that's how you're going to enjoy your life. Healthy. The healthier you are, the more you're going to enjoy your life.
According to National Business Group on Health, this was a few years ago, companies with worksite wellness programs experience an 8% increase in employee productivity. Would you agree with that, Becky? That there's an increase in productivity if we look after our people?
Absolutely. And we've been running the awards to recognise companies that are doing very well for the last 4 years. And one of the key things that our judges look for are key metrics and business objectives. So how is corporate health and wellness helping the business commercially, as well as helping the employees themselves?
4001, we really want to get your thoughts on this this evening. We've had a question in already. We'll get to that shortly. We want to know your thoughts. What's your employer doing for you? What would you like to see happen? Sally, that's what I really want to hear about tonight. Do people think that they're being looked after well enough at work?
And it could be anything. I mean, we were talking about how open offices, maybe they're not such a great idea. Maybe they're not conducive to productivity. Maybe they don't make us feel so good. There is research to say that actually open plan offices are not good for us.
Shane's doing a thumbs down. You're not a fan of open plan either. Sally's not either.
It's just horrible. I mean, really, they're just trying to save money. They're trying to create a scalable human capital solution, which means that, you know, if you terminate someone, they can easily ramp up because you're in the open environment. But it's a complete lack of privacy. It's almost like a chicken farm. You know, you're squishing people in as much as you can, and I don't think it's very positive.
Isn't it meant to be collaborative?
It's not actually collaborative, because, you know, you're going to have a lot of inter-office politics, and people are going to be sticking their fingers into things that they shouldn't be sticking them in. And, you know, when a group gets beyond five people, it's proven that it becomes less productive. So you want to keep conversations, some conversations need to be private.
Quite frankly, I mean, they always say you're going to have people, you know, interacting and being more creative because of the interaction. But I don't think people talk about work as much as they're talking about other things and what they did on the weekend and what their plans are for that evening and whatever. It becomes inevitably about other stuff. Like you said, it just, I'm not sure that it's about work anymore.
Well, and it's exponentially more expensive to put in offices, especially, you know, if we were, for example, going to split this room into four offices, as soon as you put a wall that touches the ceiling, you need fire approval, and you're going to need another sprinkler. And so the fit-out cost just goes through the roof. So it's a simple, cheap solution that they try to put in the guise of let's be collaborative and be creative. But at the end of the day, it's just the corporation trying to save a few bucks.
Do you agree with Shane and Sally? Are you not a fan of open plan, or do you like the collaborative nature of some modern office spaces? 4001 to get involved in the conversation. Much more coming up on Career Connect on this topic of workplace wellness.
No matter your preferred communication, stay in touch with Drive Live, only on Dubai Eye 103.8.
4001, if you want to get in touch tonight. Claire and Sally with you this evening, and we're talking careers.
Career Connect.
We've got Shane Phillips, Managing Director of the Phillips Group in the studio, and we've got Becky Kramer, Programme Director for Awards at Mead. And Becky, I wanted to come to you. You work on the Demand Corporate Health Awards, of course, with Mead. And we're talking just off the air there about what exactly wellness means. And it's really not just about encouraging someone to walk up the stairs, is it?
No, I mean, some companies are starting off their programs focusing on the fitness side of wellness. But I think, mental wellness is something that organizations are starting to focus on a lot more. And as we were talking about earlier, the physical facility and environment that an employer is providing for their employees as well. Yeah, so there are lots of pillars. There's eating, eating healthily, getting a good night's sleep. It's not just about the fitness side of wellness.
So how does a company get involved in that? How does a company help me or encourage me to get a better night's sleep, for example? How do these programs roll out, if you like?
So if I think about Mashreq Bank as an example, they have entered the award since we started 4 years ago, and they've implemented an initiative which started off very much with awareness and education campaigns, so very much on the communication side of things. And then, on the journey in the last couple of years, it's focused very much more on actionable participation. So they've had programs for their leadership team. Recently, they did a challenge where their goal was to get 1,000 employees involved in the fitness challenge. Companies are sort of going on that journey, I think, of first of all thinking about education and awareness, and then furthering on with, actual participation and follow-up health checks and regular measurement.
So I was just going to mention this, Sally, that, talking about what Becky just was in terms of why it's worth doing, people of a healthy weight take half as many sick days as people who are overweight, for example. So it does pay to do it.
It does pay to do it. But like we've been saying, there is something that we need to think about, and that is cost. It's interesting because Stephen has messaged in on that point saying, great, my employer can pay for my gym membership, my bike, and the difference between processed food and organic foods.
Maybe Shane can take that one. I can see he wants to.
I think that if an employer should pay a gym membership, then the employee should be held accountable to fitness goals. So at the end of the year, you have a certain amount of body fat percentage you're going to take off, or, and you're going to have a fitness test at the beginning and the end. So you pass, and I would be fine with that. The employer will see, when we look at success, you can't just put it in a compartmental box and say that it's just in your career. Disciplines, concepts like self-discipline, self-esteem, self-confidence, they thread everything from your personal life to your self-concept to the way you act in the professional environment. So you come into work, you're feeling great, you look good, your self-esteem is higher, self-confidence higher, it's going to deliver an alpha in your performance. So, to an extent, I don't know, some organic foods may not be any better than processed foods. If you eat enough of anything, it's going to make you fat. So I'm sure he threw that in there for dramatic effect.
Probably, but I know what he means. It is more expensive than processed food.
So you're all for it. You're saying employers should be paying for the gym memberships of those employees who want them or need them. Is that right?
I think, as you move forward, and I think this is one of the things that they misplace about the millennials, where they say, oh, the millennials want to change jobs so much. I'm sorry, because you have a tablet, you're not going to fundamentally change human psychiatry or psychology. What's really happening is they're becoming more empathetic. And so they can go online and, if you have a beef slaughterhouse that's just unwell, as some say, they're going to know about that, and they're going to be disengaged with your brand. There's going to be no sense of purpose. And we can talk about wellness, but what about, for example, Doctors Without Borders, where you have people living in grass huts, but they love their jobs and they're performing phenomenally well. So the sense of purpose, a sense of direction, a real sense of meaning. And we're going to see, as we move in the 21st century, the crossing of personal lives and professional lives. And you're going to see the end of work work-life balance. It's going to move into work-life control. You're going to see people really want their own personal sense of identity to be really melded with their professional identity. And so as organizations move into this evolution, you know, your annual goal setting and quarterly goal setting can't just be about how much widgets did we sell. It's got to be your personal goals. It's got to be your professional goals. Health has to be in there. And on the flip side, one of the most unfortunate things is that as you really want to compete in one area, and some of the areas that Becky mentioned, like sleep, diet, these are the first things to go when you're under pressure, when you're under stress, when you're in the face of very significant, fierce competition. And in fact, we can see productivity go through the roof. So when you, and this is where some of the data may be contradictory. So for example, if you look at the Second World War, you saw gross national product jump by 40% between 1941 and 1944, which is a phenomenal, it's superhuman performance. And these were the worst conditions. Bombs were dropped on people. People were literally dying. These were the worst and most unwell work conditions you can choose. War is the worst, right? We had the invention of penicillin, atomic energy, jet engines, the first computer, even super glue, right?
So do you think we should be putting more pressure on our staff and our team and not worrying about the wellness at all? Because, I mean, I hear what you're saying, but the Second World War was quite some time ago, and I guess things have moved on in terms of how we might want to treat people. Are we looking at, you think it's too soft to look after people? We should be pushing them harder. Productivity is not related to health?
Well, see, no, this is where it depends. What do you define as success? If you're saying, look, you know, I want to have a balanced life and I want to have a job and go back home to my family, fine. But if you're saying, look, I want to be the face of my industry, I want to make a huge contribution. Like if you look at, you know, we pick that one, say atomic energy, Einstein's life was not balanced. It was not necessarily well. He suffered a divorce. He was not a good father. There's a lot of negative things there, right? So you have to make sacrifices. If you are really going to make a contribution to humanity or be in that top 1%, other things in your life will suffer. And so when we look at those extreme top performers, you'll see an increased incidence of heart disease. You'll see an increased rate of maybe obesity or substance abuse or so many other issues that become an increased level of suicide, in fact, as well. And we see that all the time when you look at Hollywood actors, you say, well, why did that guy kill himself? You know, they're pushing themselves to such a limit, to such an extent that your health will suffer. And so what I'm saying is they start to tie in wellness with productivity, and they also try to tie in happiness with productivity, and that's not necessarily the case. If you take the top earners of the top 1% of any profession, you will find that, in fact, they will have a lower level of happiness, you know, because ambition by its very definition is the lack of contentment.
So can you not be ambitious and well?
Yeah, that's very easy.
Very difficult to achieve is what you're saying.
No, if you're not ambitious.
That's what I'm saying. You can't be ambitious and well.
Yeah, if you're being extremely competitive, you will suffer. That's what I'm saying.
What do you make of that, Becky?
So I was just thinking of an example that one of our finalists told me last week during our judging sessions, and they were telling me about one of their top performers who was working around sort of 12, 13-hour days, and they were sort of quite worried that he wasn't really spending his evenings at home and he was, you know, borderline workaholic. And they actually brought in a consultant to help him. They got his working day down to 7 hours, I think, and he was still running at the same sort of performance. Yeah.
It made him more efficient with his time.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Mm.
So do you think it's about efficiency, Shane? You don't seem
I find
so
that
convinced.
A tough pill to yeah, it's a tough pill to swallow that. I mean,
because what you're saying is if we're looking at the Elon Musks of the world, if we are looking at the Steve Jobs of the world, if we want to reach, you know, the highest level in our industry, forget it. You are not going to have work-life balance. You are not going to be feeling well. I mean, Elon Musk is notorious for the way that he works his staff. They sleep on site sometimes. You know, there are all kinds of stories that come out of his workplace.
Yeah, and Steve Jobs died of cancer. And I'm just reading Khalaf Al-Habtour's book, who's a local, you know, he's done phenomenally well. And he suffered ulcers. And, you know, throughout his book, he's writing about how the pressures of his work and, you know, running so many different businesses took a massive toll on his health. It's right there in black and white. So, You know, but so when you when you're pushing yourself to compete in the global marketplace, and I'm not saying maybe you can be a local champion. So I can be very good at what I do here in Dubai and maybe work a 7-hour day. But if you want to be top 1% globally, and you're going to be competing against people coming, and some of the hungriest people are from these emerging markets, who you know they really came out of humble beginnings. They are so hungry, and you're competing against these people, you will have to work around the clock, because that's really what the market is.
So, okay, we don't all want to be in the top 1%. We don't all want to be Elon Musk or Steve Jobs or whoever. There's a lot of people who do want to do well at work, to get on at work, but they want to have work-life balance as well. And what we're talking about are companies that do things better to allow their team, their employees, their staff, whatever you want to call them collectively, of all levels, Becky. And I think, is it something that, you know, depending on the level that you're at, this maybe is more relevant or more important to you?
No, I think maybe there are industries that are maybe more need wellness more than others, should we say. So if I think about one of our shortlisted organizations, Omnicom Media, you know, the media and creative industry always has very sort of pressured deadlines that won't necessarily be in normal office hours, and Omnicom are very much supporting their teams when they have to work, you know, past the 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock normal working day.
What I'm trying to get to is, if you're in a not very high up job, not managerial, is wellness more important to you in your workplace and say somebody who's decided, as Shane is suggesting, that I'm going to throw everything into my career and I don't need to, I've decided that's my priority, not everything else?
I think it's the importance level is the same for everyone. So if I think about some of our local business leaders, so Abdulaziz Al Ghurair, the CEO of Mashreq Bank, the ex-CEO of Dubai Holding, Ahmad Bin Bayat, you know, they are very, very successful local business leaders, and they have inspired their teams, you know, to be healthier and being active in participation. So not just, you know, told or asked their employees to be, to get involved in their wellness programs. They've been heavily involved themselves.
Fascinating topic with lots of sides to it. 4001 if you want to get your thoughts in. Not much longer left, as we've been debating for so long, but do get in touch if you can. More coming up shortly.
We want to hear from you. Find us on Facebook. Tweet at Dubai I 1038 FM.
It's Drive Live and it's Career Connect. Claire and Sally with you this evening. Also Shane Phillips, Managing Director of the Phillips Group, and Becky Craman, Programme Director for Awards at Mead. We've had a couple of points come in on the text line, Sally.
We have. Really interesting about financials and mental well-being. This one coming in saying open floor plan is just a value engineering tactic for property developers and building owners. Employees' wellness is not related to an individual who's working in the office. In fact, it's related to the mental relaxation of the employee from his or her family as well. Organizations should take care of this aspect by supporting personal financial matters through corporate social responsibility.
Martin also talks about financial wellness. He asks whether financial or physical well-being is more important. He says there's a real need for companies to take a more paternalistic approach to financial well-being and help employees avoid pitfalls and plan for retirement with dignity. Becky, that's quite an interesting one, because I guess it's something that's really is important here. A lot of us are expats. We've got to think about what happens after we leave our jobs here. Financial planning, we all know that a lot of people get wrapped up in schemes that maybe aren't right for them. Was that an area of wellness that you saw coming in more to the companies that were entering your awards?
Yes, I think it's always been needed, but especially over the last 2 years, maybe companies are asking experts to come into the office, have you know, one-to-one private meetings with employees to advise them on financial wellness. And just making sure that they've got the advice that they need.
Shane, one for you here. Shiraz says, one important element we need to consider is that high achievers also seek and enjoy happiness like others, but of a different kind. The joys of being successful, for example. It's a matter of all having different kryptonite.
of us all having different kryptonite?
Kryptonite. So if you are highly successful, you might not feel very well, but you don't care because you've got what you wanted, which was to be successful, I guess is Shiraz's point.
Well, I think we just need to separate. These are two totally different things, such as I'm full, I'm hungry, I'm happy, I'm successful. These are all different elements. So you can be highly successful and miserable, and you can be highly successful and elated. So that's what I just want to keep those separated. But what I wanted to just drive home is that if you are feeling dispassionate, if you are feeling like things are not going very well, if you feel like quitting, I mean, one of the main things that separates those people who make it up the ladder and those who maybe just stay within the herd is the ability to be tenacious and resilient and continue on when other people would want to quit. And I always feel that some of this PC jargon about passion and stuff gives people more of an excuse to quit. And I think when you look at your career, when you're in the years, you know, from year 4 to year 9, this is where you've kind of mastered your job. Things are not new. You're coming into something you've done a million times and you're like bored. And then you're saying, well, maybe I need a change. No, you do not need a change. You need to hunker in, you need to dig in, and you need to push yourself to the next level, which is where we have your breakout performance. So for example, we could use Barack Obama as an example. You know, for years, he was a politician. Nobody knew about him. That's where he was in that kind of burnout phase. Then he has his breakout performance where he becomes the first African-American president. So that's that. To get to that point, the darkest hours before dawn, you got to hold in and you got to continue on. I'm sure there's a lot of other African-American politicians who gave up in the 11th hour. So just keep pushing. And then you got to realize you have this moment of happiness or success or whatever you want to call it, but then you get a whole new set of pressures which will threaten your wellness, which is the psychological stress and the resilience, because once he is president, 2 years in, you know, they're all trying to knock him off and you got all kinds of problems, you know, and people trying to destroy you, slander you, and so it's not
just seeing how gray he went during his presidency. You could see the toll it was taking. But it's a really good point. I mean, what you're saying really is basically it's about making sure if you want to go to the next level, wherever you are in your career, that we can't confuse happiness, you know, in the job with if you're not happy, just give up. That you can't always be happy. There are moments where you really need to push yourself through some really difficult times to get to the next level.
Absolutely. And I mean, that's the point. If you're miserable, if you feel like everything's going wrong for you and it's just horrible and your friends are like, oh, well, you should just quit. Don't quit. Push on through. I mean, so many successful people started with getting fired, with being homeless. J.K. Rowling, her story started when she was homeless. So if everything's going wrong, congratulations. You're taking your first step towards success.
And I guess, Becky, you'd say that once you aren't homeless and you do have a job, it'd be nice if your employer supported you in achieving those goals.
Yeah, yeah.
Sanjay, just quickly to...
Yeah, we give him the last word, shall we?
To Sanjay's. A couple of last comments, actually. Steve did message in earlier saying the only people who advocate open plan offices are those who don't have to work in them. Sanjay says work-life balance does not exist. It's all about prioritization. Just as one prioritizes their work in the 7 hours that they spend there, one needs to practice that in life. For many, life after work is just watching TV. So if you choose to be that 1%, as Shane mentions, then you are making that choice.
And that's your balance, I think, is what he means. Absolutely. We've run out of time. As usual, really interesting discussion. Becky, before we let you go, just run us through where we are with the awards and when they're happening. When are we going to know who's won?
We have just announced the 48 finalists, and the winners will be announced on the 25th of October at the awards ceremony at the Westin Mina Siyahe in Dubai.
Right. We look forward to hearing who the champion is. Thank you very much for coming in and telling us about it this evening and sharing your thoughts on wellness.
Thank you.
And Shane Phillips, Managing Director, of course, of the Phillips Group. Good as ever to have you in. Always lively.
Thank you for having me.